Welcome to Series 3 of the Rugby Buzz, a podcast brought to you by H&HB Events. My name is Mark Hartery, and I'll be your host as I chat to rugby stars past and present about their careers and moments from their careers that remain highlights for them. Today, I'm delighted to be able to chat to the former Harlequins and England back rower, Jack Clifford. Jack started his Harlequins career when he joined their academy and made his debut for the senior side in 2012. He became a key part of the senior squad, going on to captain them and making 100 appearances. After appearing in many England squads, he made his full debut against Scotland in 2016 and went on to win 10 caps for his country, winning every one. He won a Grand Slam and a Six Nations title and led the England under-20s to a Junior World Cup win in 2013. Sadly, on his 100th appearance, he suffered yet another injury, which ultimately forced his retirement from the game, aged just 27. Post-rugby, he is now employed by Premiership sponsors Gallagher Insurance as a business development executive. Hi, Jack. Welcome to the Rugby Buzz. How are things?
Yeah, not too bad. It's been end of a busy day and busy Monday, but yeah, not too bad. It's been good.
Mondays are always busy. They're never good. Never good after the weekend. Although I would imagine, whilst you were still playing, Mondays weren't a great day. Loads of recovery and stuff, I would imagine.
Yeah, quite a lot of recovery. But at the same time, it's quite similar in a lot of admin, a lot of meetings, a lot of stuff to go through from the game on a Saturday. So, yeah, Mondays are actually quite similar. No, it's I end up doing most of my. admin on a Monday, finishing, and same with the Friday actually. So yeah, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is busy, just kind of filling everything in there. But no, Mondays seems to always be a fairly admin heavy day.
Yeah. We'll chat about your new role a bit later on. But we've got a couple of your favourite games to pick up on as well a little bit later. But at the time of recording, we are smack bang in the middle of Six Nations this weekend. England are playing Ireland. Two wins so far from England's perspective. How do you think those games are going to go? Ireland and then France away, two real big ones.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying if I said I was wholeheartedly confident in those. I mean, it's one thing to step away from it and be in the position I am to sit there and say, I could probably say I am probably not as confident as I have been in previous years. But I mean, you look at the squad, everyone's been going on about the talent pool that England have to pick from and things like that. And they do have an amazing pool. And I think there's an element of consistency you want. I mean, the likes of Dom Brandt not being able to be in camp all week because of COVID, it does have, has knock-on effects. But as an ex-player, as an ex-England player, I want them to win.
Yeah, of course.
I really do. I really want them to win. But at the same time, when you look at kind of the performances that Ireland have put out, the performances that France have put out, they are two of the hardest games. And at least they are at the end and you're building up to it. And I mean, you can say that from England's performances that, yes, they have been building up. You look at Scotland, obviously, was disappointing. Italy was a step in the right direction. Wales was great until the last probably 20 minutes or so. So hopefully you are building to a culmination of hopefully their best performance out in France. But when you're looking at the kind of the squads they're up against, the guys they're playing against, it's hard to sit here and go, yeah, I'm fully sold on an England to two wins in those last two games.
Yeah, but at least England are playing Ireland at Twickenham, and that's a huge advantage, you know, to be at Twickenham for that game. Going out to Dublin is always a different proposition. But how much will that be a factor on Saturday?
Yeah, I think it always is. I mean, the home crowd are great, and I mean, personally, I always quite liked a partisan crowd. I liked playing away from home. It was something that got me going. But at the same time, like you say, being in front of 80,000 at Twickenham, it is going to make a difference. It might even persuade the ref in certain situations that you need. There are things like that. So there is probably an unfair bias playing at home. And everyone always kind of puts, there's an element of people being scared of coming to Twickenham. It is a fortress. People do always say that. And I mean, speaking to guys who have played for Scotland and Wales and places like that, I can imagine it's an intimidating place to come. So that will play into their hands. And I really hope it does help them, because that might just be kind of the last bit that will get England a positive win at the weekend.
Yeah. Do you think there'll be any big changes from the Wales game as far as the side is concerned?
I hope not, because I feel that could be, that's the issue. I think the consistency in maybe the squad, I think you want to have, give the guys a chance to build as a team. And I think having that kind of the chopping and changing and that inconsistency might be, whenever we played at Queens, whenever we played England, it was a detriment to the side whenever you had key players and key people missing. So hopefully there isn't a huge amount of change, and they can get to keep with that consistency of a squad.
Yeah, and particularly at halfback as well. You know, Randall had a storming game probably for 50 minutes, as you'd alluded to, and Marcus Smith is obviously really growing into that role, and you'll know him well from your time at Quinn's coming up. But that looks like a really exciting halfback partnership, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. I mean, imagine if this back in the day, kind of when you had Faz and Danny coming through, and people like that, and those partnerships was been there for. You thought they'd never be. You'd never get rid of them, and you really hope that kind of looking at the likes of Randall and Smithy coming in, they are so young, and if you can keep them in those positions and really bed down, I mean, Ben Youngs has just got 115 caps, isn't
yeah,
so he's someone like him who's been around, it shows that if you can get them in young and make them a starter and a real linchpin of the team, then you can build the squad around those two. They are the two integral parts which put the kind of the forwards and the backs together. If you can have those two guys, they are both very good players. If you can have them stuck there and build the squad around them, amazing. That's exactly what England need.
Yeah, and your own department back row, again, you know, that, as you say, Don Brandt's not been in camp, and I don't know whether he's likely to be back for the weekend. But again, that back row unit is shaping up quite nicely as well, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think Underhill's gone back into the squad last week in the fallow week. So he's back in, which is nice to see. There's a lot of potential there. A lot of youngsters coming through. I always get asked if it was guys I wanted to test myself against, and the answer was no, because they're really good. Really good. So no, it's not the end of the world. I had to retire, and I can say, if only I'd had the chance, but it never happened. But yeah, you look at the likes of Domers, Curry, who's put his hand up and as an amazing player, great captain as well, guy that really kind of leads from the front. I think the likes of them, of Courtney playing at six, kind of you have that kind of extra line out option. It's what it adds another string to your bow. And Courtney, I know that some teams do it, and they maybe sacrifice a bit of speed or kind of intensity and line speed by having another second row or over the ball jackling ability. But someone like Courtney, having him there, he is a second row, but he is a back row as well with his ability to do all of those things and a carrier too. So I think some people always say, why are you playing three second rows? I think when it comes to England and having someone like Courtney who can step in there, it's not the case, because he is a back row with the ability to play second row, and and vice versa. He's a great talent and someone that can, again, lead as well. Lead really well.
Yeah. And the physicality he brings as well, Jack, is just incredible, isn't it? He doesn't shirk anything at all. And you see some of the hits. And, again, when you've got people like your Underhill or your Curry, your Don Brandt working off those, then that must be a nice back row to play in.
Definitely. I mean, if you have someone like that, I mean, everyone remembers the iconic hit against Jules Plisson. So if you have someone coming on or being able to put those shots in, it gives other guys who have maybe other talents, someone like Gary, who can get over the ball, carry as well, Domers, who's I mean, his X factor is his carrying ability. Frees them up to be able to go and do that elsewhere. I mean, if you can do that, then why not have someone in the team that can give them the ability to shine elsewhere?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's all shaping up for two really fascinating weeks. But certainly the two England games, I think, are the ones that everybody will have their eyes on. Say with Ireland and France involved as well. And looking back at the Premiership, your old side Quins, obviously champions last year, still going well. I think they're third at the moment.
Yeah.
They're in a good place, aren't they?
An amazing place. I mean, I would say that it's a team that's come together nicely towards the kind of the end of last season, the perfect time really for them to do it. Everyone kind of wrote them off, and for them to come together then, amazing. And I'd say it would probably be an element of guys that they've picked up. I mean, selection by people that they've brought in. Andre Eustace has been such a find to bring in. Dom has stepped up. Smithy, Deese pulling it all together in the middle. I mean, those three with Andre on the outside just add so much. Tyrone Green, just there's a huge amount of guys coming in who have added something and been given the ability to kind of just say, look, go out and express yourself. Maybe that they haven't been able to at other clubs, or they haven't international or elsewhere. But I think that, yeah, they've been given a lot of freedom to really kind of show what they're about, which has been great. And it's wonderful to see. I think, I've said it before, kind of the last 3-4 weeks of the Premiership last year, I haven't seen a better advert for rugby in years.
No, and in the last series of the podcast, I chatted to Nick Evans, and you just see, you know, Adam Jones, we know quite well as well, and that just that whole environment that new coaching team after Paul Gustard left have kind of created, and as you say, freedom is a word that you do now associate with Harlequins.
Definitely, and I think there is that. At the same time, their defence has been backed up as well. I'd say the Quins of kind of old, where when I first joined was pretty much, we're not going to defend, we'll just outscore you. that there is an element of that, and as people are saying that, I disagree. I think there is a lot more about them in their defence, and there's a lot more in their unity in that sense. So I think that it's less like that, and people are still struggling to find a way to counteract kind of the players they have. To be fair, you see games where, even the Bath game or something like that, where kind of Andre's carries were slightly nullified by big hits. I mean, Nathan Hughes absolutely smoked him. And there'll be times like that where if you do get on top of them and you do suppress their real talismans, they do struggle. But at the same time, if you don't, and they have enough of them, they have so many that if you can't, you've got Liner on the one wing, Tyrone at the back, Caden Murley, you've got Andre, Luke Northmore, who's just got himself into the England squad, kind of, yeah. Hugh Jones as well. All of these players in the backs, then in the back row, kind of, you've got Tommy Lauday, guys like that, who people would say maybe are slightly overlooked when you have Dom Brandt, who's playing so well. But guys like that who are really stepping up and making plays. Archie White, who, again, exactly like in that kind of category of that maybe would be overlooked, but are stepping up. And people kind of worried now when everyone was going away to England, would they be able to perform?
Yeah.
Maybe it's not as slick. Maybe the games aren't as interesting or high scoring. Hey, W2W, people are winning and they're still third place. And where guys probably thought we can take a scalp and we can get some extra points, and they haven't been able to yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's set up nicely for the when, you know, guys come back from the Six Nations for that last run-in, and for us being sat down here in Gloucester, we're hoping that, you know, we join you in that top four as well. But it's, you know, it's incredibly competitive, and you know, Harlequins deserve to be in there, but you know, there's five or six sides pushing up.
There are, and again, it's a great advert for what rugby is at the moment. So hopefully it stays that way. I think you hope that the days of there being three runaway teams and one trying to limp its way in at fourth are gone, and that you want that kind of that real fight for the top four, top six. Kind of that look I couldn't think of a better way to get people interested in the game.
Yeah, and they said having no relegation would make it dull and boring, didn't they?
I do. I still think that they need it. I think they need it.
I agree.
They shouldn't ring fence it. They shouldn't. And I mean, you can say it. I think the way. Yeah, I wish that they'd look at somehow sorting it so teams could come up, because the likes of having that last bit, you'd want that. You have amazing entertainment at the top of the table, but you also want it at the bottom.
Yeah, of course you do.
I mean, if you had that fight out at the end of the season between kind of Worcester, Bath, Newcastle, all of that down there, it would make the whole league would be interesting. Mm. Everyone would be there, and I mean, the Bath fans have been amazing this year. You look at kind of what they've been going through and looking for a win, and the fact that they still sell out the stadiums is great. But you want that kind of that interest throughout the whole league, I think, unfortunately.
Yeah, and the carrot for those guys in the Championship, you know, your Ealings and your, I know Donny. They've
that's a hell of a league. I mean, going off on a tangent, but you think the amount of players that have come through, and I think everyone says it. The amount of players that have come through those lower leagues, and I mean British and Irish Lions, that have played in the Championship and National One, it's a shame that it's getting overlooked so much, I think, and you do hope that there is a somewhere someone can find a way to kind of push the league forward.
Yeah, the decision to deny them, the criteria, 10,000 crowd, and I think I saw a stat yesterday that I think there were only three of the matches had over 10,000 people at them. Yeah. So you kind of think it's a bit of an arbitrary figure, but you're right, aren't you? You know the talent in the Championship is incredible, and you know, again, we know it from down here with Hartbury. You know, Hartbury were clinging on by their fingernails a couple of years ago in the Championship. You know, were they going to stay up? Were they not? But they've grown, and you know, again, you've got a long list of players that have come through, through Hartbury. And you know, now they're a top five, top six side, and you know, doing really well. So, like you, I hope that they can find some solution to it that makes it, makes it possible for those sides to come up.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a couple of your favourite games to chat about. The first one is a Junior World Cup semi-final from 2013 when you were leading England, and against the Baby Blacks as they're known, 2013. Just to kind of set the scene in terms of that particular Junior World Cup in France, as I say, you'd come through the group, lost in the group stages to South Africa, but after I think it was 109-0, wasn't it, I think, against the USA or something like that, points difference was on your side, and you snuck into the top four in fourth place on points difference, which meant that you had to play the New Zealand side. Tell us about that World Cup. Obviously, you were selected to lead the side, but tell us about the kind of background to the World Cup and that sort of thing.
Well, when you asked the kind of the favourite games, I thought it'd just be nice to have a bit of nostalgia with going back that far. But no, we played the year before in South Africa and we'd come eighth, and they had a bit of a shocker of a tournament, not done too well. So yeah, people probably didn't look at our, and we had the squad we had before was slightly, probably a bit stronger. Going into it, kind of just thought, oh, well, see how it goes. Then off to South Africa, it was kind of a repeat of the year before. Like you said, snuck in, and then it got to New Zealand, and it was one of those games where we just thought, oh, we'll just throw the kitchen sink at it. But it was, I mean, it was great fun. It was just one of those, again, where there was a lot of freedom in playing. It was, people have kind of written us off as a, no England team had ever beaten New Zealand. I don't know when the last, since New Zealand had last lost, and it was a, they had a very strong team. It was just one of those games where everything came together and just kind of threw it about, and it was just really, really good fun. It was just when you asked, it was kind of thinking back of the guys I played with. I've been kind of playing with them since under 18, under 19, second year under 20s. But it's kind of thinking back on my career now, kind of where those guys are. You look at kind of a few of them. Again, Lions, playing the weekend, playing for England, starting. Just class players. And some of them, Ant Watson, I played with from Surrey since I was 15. Kyle, he wasn't on that at all, I know, but Sinclair, I'd played against him since we were all under 12. So I was playing for Cranley, he was playing for Battersea Ironside.
Yeah.
So some of those players that kind of we came up with, it's just kind of, it's fun to look back at those games. And there is an element, I mean, we look at the squad now, and I think out of the starting 15, I think about five of us are about to retire, have retired since.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, but kind of it's one of those where we look back on it. And I mean, there's Tom Stevenson, I run into him every so often. He now works. He was working at an FX firm, but he now works. He lives in Clapham, but I run into him every so often. It's always nice to kind of reminisce a little bit. Ben Howard works at JLL. We end up kind of talking about it, and everyone kind of takes the piss a bit. That we're all just chatting about the under 20s and stuff like that. But it's good fun. It's nice to kind of reminisce on those games, and they are fun, really, really fun memories.
Yeah, and as you say, that whole squad, and just in terms of prepping for this, you're looking down the squad, and as you say, you've got guys there that will be playing on the weekend. You know, not only for England, but you had Ross Moriarty in the back row. You had Callum Brayley as well on the bench. And so you've got a chunk of those players who've gone on and gone on to full England honours, and as you say, Lions. But there's also a good number, as you touched on, that just like you have had to retire for various reasons. So it really kind of sums up in that one squad what, you know, how brilliant rugby can be, and I guess how cruel it can be in that just by looking at that squad.
You know, it really does kind of, and you look at kind of previous people who won the World Cup, but kind of you go through that. I mean, there was one squad, when I was at Quinn's, I was looking through with Francis Saley was playing, and you look at kind of Bowden Barrett, him, there's just reams of All Blacks in it. Some of the South African, Andre Pollard, guys like that who've won it in years gone by. But you do look at it, kind of the cruelty of rugby it does surmise it quite nicely in a way of saying you have guys who are amazing playing here, there and everywhere, and you're other guys who've had to join the real world and see kind of where that takes them. And that's why I kind of, it's one of my favorite games, or one of kind of that tournament was a great tournament for me, because it almost goes back to kind of those days when rugby wasn't a job. Rugby was more of it was just good fun with the lads, and kind of just one of those. Yes, we all were professionally contracted. We all were taking it very seriously. At the same time, you're still 20, 19, and you think you're invincible. And it was just like one of those where, again, that game as well, you've written off. No one really thinks you're going to win. So everything's just like, chuck it around. It's like a kind of a school game, just with all the best people from school.
Exactly, and it must be fab having had the experience in South Africa, and then as that tournament builds, and you say you get to a semi-final, you've kind of crept in fourth place, a bit under the radar. Nobody's expecting you to do anything against these All Blacks who are invincible because they haven't lost for 600 years or whatever in a Junior World Cup. But That's a great for a captain, I guess. That's a great position to be in when you've got all your mates around you, and it's kind of, come on, we're going to give this a go. No one thinks we're going to win, so let's give it a go.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I hardly said anything. I didn't have to. It was just one of those games where kind of the stage says it all. The stage does it all, and I think Wales had beaten South Africa just before it as well. So yeah, it was one of those where you look at kind of they'd come through as an underdog and won as an underdog. And it's just like, well, if they could do it, so can we, kind of thing. It was just, yeah, it was one of those where it was just like, hey, let's chuck it about and see what happens. And it all like came to fruition, which was great. Yeah. And again, it's just, it was kind of looking back on one of those days when it wasn't just, it wasn't as serious. And I'm not saying in a way that I look on games where, it was my job, it was my everything about it, because I love those games. I mean, I'm guessing we'll touch on them later, but it was just one of those where it was a really fun one where you can look back and go, actually, this is just something that I'm good at, we're all good at it, and it's just good fun.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, half time, you're 20 points to 8 up, and as you say, you touched on the some of the people in the New Zealand side, but, you know, Surveyor was captain, Scott Barrett, I think, was in there as well. So, you know, from 1 to 15, again, formidable. But at half time, 20 points to 8 up, you must think, well, hang on, we're halfway there now. And, of course, New Zealand being New Zealand come back. And, you know, they crawled to within, I think, 2 points with just 7 minutes to go. And then, again, a try. And, of course, Henry Slade was playing at fly half in that side. So, again, up at half time, they come back at you. And to have the desire and the fortitude, I guess, to go on and put the game to bed, incredible.
I think that was just the team, though. That was just one of them. Again, we've written off, not thinking we're going to win. Yes, probably got a bit confident. Got one of those, like you do in any sport. Obviously, the Kiwis are going to be like, well, we're not going to give up without a fight. It's one of those. And like you said, to have the fortitude, I think, to be able to see it out, this was testament to the team of that were probably written off by quite a few people and undervalued and probably underlooked.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there any one moment in that game that kind of stands out for you to say, you know, we're going to do this?
No. There's this one that I tried to score on the 5 meter line. That's the one that sticks out at me. I saw the five was on the back of a mall, saw the 5 meter line, dived on it, looked at the ref, and he looked at me and went, no. I looked to my right and was like, oh, shit.
Wrong line,
wrong line, and tried to get up and join in again, and it was one of those. So I'm just glad we did win. Otherwise, I'm sure I know that the lad saw it, and I know it all went a bit wrong because I tried to play it off that someone had tackled me, and I thought, everyone knew, and I'm really glad that we won the game in the end, because if I tried to score in the 5 meter line in that game and lost us the chance to go to the final, I don't think I would have lived that one down.
And then you say the final, Wales had already beaten South Africa. And again, it just touching on the final briefly, you know, at half time, you were down 15-3. And again, just shows the resilience of that side and the group of lads that you had to pull it back. I don't think they scored in the second half, did they?
No, they didn't. And I mean, I said against the New Zealand game, I didn't have much to say at half time. I had a lot to say at half time on that one. So did the coach. I think it was Nick Walsh gave us a bit of a bollocking at half time. It was one of those where some stern words were had. Again, it came back. But then you look at the squad, you look at the team, kind of we had Knowlesy had a storm at that game. Sladey, Sam Hill in the centres. I think he scored a good try, a great try. So I think, again, it was just guys who have really kind of used that as a launch pad for their careers. Dickers, someone like Luke Cowan-Dickie, who has played so well since. I think all of them used it as a real kind of springboard for their careers and really showed it kind of in that second half of the final, just as, okay, let's not. We've got the chance here to kind of write our names down and look forward for kind of further England squads, further England honours. Let's really make a go of this. And yeah, everyone did. And yeah, worked out all right. And then it was a good night out afterwards.
I was just going to say, was it a good night out afterwards?
It was a good night out afterwards. It was very good.
Yeah, and no better way, you know, lots of the guys that come on the podcast and we talk about different games, but probably the one theme that goes through all of it is doing it with your mates.
Yeah.
It's just you know, so important to do that. And it's fab to hear you saying, you know, you bump into some of these guys now and yeah, that's immediately what you talk about. And people especially say that about rugby all the time, don't they?
Yeah, it's quite funny doing it in like you're saying, the in real world circumstances and just in situations like that where it's it's different, but it's to be able to look back on kind of those bits and that's the thing, is because I'm retired early, it's different, and other friends of mine haven't yet got to that stage in their careers. But I'm sure kind of looking on later in life, kind of a few years down when a few other guys maybe have moved to the dark side and come into the real world, I think it'll be a few more situations where you're sat in an environment where you probably shouldn't be so friendly with someone, and you walk over and it's just like old mates, kind of guys you used to play against, play with, and it's always kind of, it breaks down barriers very, very easily, and it does make it it's good fun. It's nice, and it's nice to have something, a connection like that to kind of to get a look back on.
Yeah, and the other game that you've picked out as one to have a chat about, I think 2017, the Six Nations game at the Millennium, as I think it was, mm-hmm. was then,
yeah.
Wales, England. And again, setting the scene, I think it was your first Six Nations start?
It was my first start for England, I think. No, it wasn't. It was my first Six Nations start.
Yeah. And, you know, England had the Grand Slam the previous mm-hmm. year. Again, you were part of that. Beating France in round one, and then that trip to Cardiff for that start. So again, talk about the build up to that game and you know, going down to Cardiff.
Well, I mean that game, I didn't play well in that game. I look back on that game not in like fond memories in that way. I just, I mean, you ask, it's like kind of what games I look. I think I was actually pretty shit in that game. I'm not going to lie, but as a place to play, an atmosphere, everything about it, it kind of, normally I would dwell on those games and be like, I think even Eddie told me I was pretty shit afterwards. I'm
not
gonna...
It's not like Eddie.
I know exactly, but it was just one of those ones where the whole atmosphere, the whole build-up, everything about it was just amazing. And kind of being able to play in the Principality in a Six Nations game after a Grand Slam as a, like I said, I like a hostile environment. I like a partisan like crowd to play against. I don't think you'll ever get a more kind of hostile environment than England Wales in Wales after you've beaten them in a Grand Slam kind of before and something like that. So yeah, and then also the way we won as well in the end with kind of Sink nearly charging it down 40 to Faz to Daly in the corner or either way. Anyway,
yeah,
it was a great way to win. And yeah, it was just one of those. But like I said, I don't look back on the fondest memories as a me playing. I just as a rugby experience for me to have, it was amazing to kind of look back on and go, actually, wow, I was there. And I mean, it just, there are snippets of it which are funny. I look back on, I'll just never, we're driving into the stadium, you drive through the middle of Wales, Cardiff. And it was just like a Wetherspoons, and this old lady could have been about the same age as my nan. She walks out, and just everyone else has kind of headphones on, staring, looking through notes. I'm looking out. I'm quite chilled before the game, looking out the window, and she just comes over and just gives him the finger to the bus. And I was just like, I just started laughing. I was just like, I didn't realize how much they hate him, because she had a pint of Guinness, tottered out, walked over, did that, walks back in. I was like, you're old enough to be my nan. Like, what are you doing? But I just thought it was just amazing. Just as a snippet, just kind of like bring you back to reality. Because I was, obviously, first start, Six Nations, you're getting nervous. Something is a grounding moment to crack you up before a game. It's just an old bird giving you the finger on the way to a match. I was like, yeah, okay, that's quite funny. So no, it's just, like I said, it probably wasn't my finest game. There was, I mean, there definitely were other games I could look back on that I played a lot better. I mean, the try, I scored a try at Twickenham. With that one, great feeling. I mean, everyone thought it was a knock-on, but it's one of those. Take anything. I can still say I did it once. Yeah. Loads of different things that I can look back on. But as a real purist rugby experience, to play there away in the Principality is just unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. And as I think I said to you before, I mean, you know, I'm proud Welshman, and I was at the game, and I remember what an incredible atmosphere. Roof was closed, I think. So, that holds it all in. And again, as a Welshman, welcoming England down to Cardiff, as you say, all those things, reigning Grand Slam champions, and so on. You
kind of Australia tour, everything. It was just like everything had built up that we were kind of the ones to beat. It's such a good atmosphere to be in. You work so hard to kind of get to those situations, and everyone says that playing, you want to play in those games. And that's what people say to me now. Do I miss rugby? I don't really miss it. But then they go, oh, do you miss those games? I'm like, well, of course I do. Everyone, I'd be stupid if I didn't miss those games. There's no other context that you're going to have a situation like that, which is unbelievable. Yeah. But it's just one of those. So for me, it's going to sound so noisy that I'm saying it, but as a real rugby purist in me, that was a hell of an experience.
Yeah, yeah. And I can remember I was sat up in the gods somewhere and Wales were ahead, and, you know, there were 10 minutes to go. And then, as you say, I think Faz knocked over a penalty. And then that move from fairly deep, if I remember, I think it was a kick or whatever, and it come, and you could see from up above, because as you know, in the stadium, you're kind of on top of the action, and you could see that arcing run that Elliot Daly was going to make, and you could see he was going to score, and it was just like, oh no, what's happening? It, you could just see it from, and it just, you know, kind of all unfolded. To pull it round from being behind, talk to loads and loads of people about that atmosphere in Cardiff, and you know, as you've just said, as a kind of visiting player, and that the bus coming in down Westgate Street, I've heard stories of people headbutting the bus and so on and so on, but
it is incredible. It is a great experience.
Yeah, but and again, it's one that one that you've experienced, and of course you were up against Ross in that game as well.
Yeah, I was. I was playing against him. He had a stormer too, so it's bad. It's a shame to break back.
I must admit, when you first said about the game, and I started to look at the game, and I was expecting to see
it was
17 tackles and loads of carries and bits and pieces, and then you think, again
it's one of those where kind of, because I haven't since kind of is doing stuff like this where you do reminisce and kind of think back on games, because I've left and kind of just gone straight into another job and things like that, and I've never really had an opportunity to kind of reminisce. And I wouldn't, you put all those bits to the side, kind of where you realize, oh, it's been I actually didn't play that well, it was a shit game, it was this, it was that. You go, actually, the experience there, I mean, singing national anthem first game, again, I think the Scottish national anthem is one of the best, and hearing that at Murrayfield in my first cap was like, I think those little snippets are the bits that you remember when you walk away and kind of you sit there. And I'm not going to sit here. I'm not one of those that kind of, when it comes to post-career, kind of sit here and go, oh, actually, I made 100 tackles in that game, or I scored 7 tries and did this, this, and this. Because those are the bits that kind of, they're tangible to some, but not to me. And for me, it's the kind of real, the memories and those kind of, those bits that you have. And like the, I mean, one, what was the singing? We were doing a national anthem. I think it was my first time playing for England against the Barbarians. Seeing the national anthem, I remember looking up to where the friends and family are, and I could spot my old man because he was wearing a bright pink t-shirt. And a bright pink and a pretty much Crocodile Dundee hat. And I was just thinking, what have you come dressed as? Yes. It's his first cap, and you come dressed like that. It's just those are the memories, and those are the bits you kind of look back on and think it's really funny. And I look at my career as I know people have walked away, and because I've walked away I had to walk away quite early. People go, oh, do you miss this? Do you miss that? Like, you must kind of resent rugby, resent bits of it. Like, no, I don't resent anything, and it's probably because of the way I've had to leave. I didn't fall out of favour. It's just kind of my body gave up on me, unfortunately. But it's I can say I have no regrets coming away from the game. I mean, and the position I'm in now with where I am, it's just, I loved everything. It's opened so many doors, and it's helped me out in kind of in my later life. But I have no regrets kind of from my career, which is, it's a lovely position to sit in.
Yeah. Talking about the injury of, obviously, I think it was the injury itself in your 100th game. Was it?
Yeah.
You know, again, how ironic for that. But did you know at the time that it was that bad an injury, or was that just a series of another, you know, along in a series of injuries?
It was another one, and I think it was one of the, it was probably the straw that broke the camel's back. I mean, by that point, I'd had this shoulder reconstructed. I had 3 ops on this one. So this one reconstructed twice. So my hamstring stuck back on twice. My ankle fully reconstructed. I dislocated my knee and both MCLs twice or once. I've done some cartilage taken out of my knee. So then when this shoulder went, 5 concussions, I think, I nearly punctured my lung once. It's just just a bit of a... It was a car crash, in all honesty. So when this one happened, I was just there like, ugh. And then, so I had the surgery on it. Then surgery didn't go that well. I ended up, went back in. A few of the bolts had snapped. One had got embedded somewhere. Just a bit of a nightmare. I woke up from the next one, and the guy went, look, mate, I think you're going to have to retire. And to be fair, it was probably one of those where I sat there and went, you know, honestly, I think, well, I know my mum, my missus, my dad sat there and went, thank God someone's told them not to.
Yes.
It's taking that away from me. It was nice. I think in my heart of hearts, I didn't want to anyway. I couldn't. But having someone there say, look, mate, it's a no-go anymore. And I was just like, actually, to have that taken away makes it a lot easier. So it's one of those where, it's fine now. Like I can't play rugby, but I can watch it. I can play 80. I can't play 18 holes. I can hack around the golf course. Luckily it's my left. So I can't play tennis either. I can't play any sports. I'm pretty not great when it comes to it. I like the social side of all of them because that's where I am now. It's a lot more. I go and play golf so I can sit in the pub afterwards. It's one of those ones, but I think it was one of those, and it pushed me to kind of look towards my next kind of career and what to look into. And I also look at it as a slightly, it was one of those where if I'd wanted to go back or if I tried to go back and I wanted to play for England again, and there was guys coming through, I'd have had to put my body in a position where you look at someone like Jack Willis, who's just coming amazing. He's just come back and it's great to see, but if that had happened to me, God knows where I would have been. And I mean, it's one of those when it comes to mental health and stuff like that, I've been gone through the ringer with that. So it's to have it, someone say, look, mate, keep your head down, go away. And I was fortunate enough to have, insured myself away, and it's one of those things where people don't look at it. It is a job. It's a and so people look at it as the financial gain. And so I had looked after myself on that set side. So actually, there wasn't that motivation of I need to do this to pay my mortgage. I need to do this to do that. That was taken care of. I was in a good position where I'd got my 100 caps. I'd got 10 caps for England. To go back, I would have had to probably put myself in. I couldn't go back. The surgeon said no, but mentally that bit would have been, I'd have to put myself in a situation where something else would break. And it wasn't just one shoulder went or constantly. It was one shoulder, hamstring, shoulder, shoulder, ankle, hamstring, shoulder. And I was just like, someone's telling you that your body's not built for this game. So go and try something else. So I'm 28 now. Oh, 29. Geez, 29 now. So it's not the worst position to go and start a new career, next career. Kind of build that up from a nice position. So yeah, why I can look back on my career in a quite a fond manner.
Yeah, and I'm interested about the having someone, I guess, make that decision for you. But mm-hmm. you touched on the kind of mental health side, because mm-hmm. that must have been a difficult time for you in terms of the financial side is brilliant.
Best that
you
are insured
and so on, but the kind of mental health side is something that I'm quite interested to understand. Kind of the roller coaster you must have gone through.
For me, it was, I had a very strong network of people outside of rugby, and I think that I'm a huge advocate for that. And whenever I talk to players, especially in the position I'm in currently, kind of where I sit, when I talk to quite a few players about kind of this side of kind of career-ending injuries and career-ending insurance, I always say you need to have. And I look at my wife, my wife now. Was amazing, looked after me. Mum and dad, great. My school friends, people like that, who knew I didn't want to speak about rugby. So you get somewhere, you have to go and turn up to a game and go, someone goes, oh, made a glass eye, things like that. It's just like, okay, yes, can get through this one. But you turn up to you go to the pub with your mates and the game's on, watch the game, and they don't talk to you about rugby. You end up picking their brains about, I don't know, equity analysts and stuff like that, where it's just people and they're like, why do you want to speak to me about kind of this? And I'm like, well, because I really don't want to talk about rugby. So talk to you about anything else. And they got it in the end. They worked it out. So you'd sit there and you always go, and they very much looked after me that way, which was great. And I had that kind of that side of it. So it was having that kind of that element to get away from rugby. And that's what really, really helped. Because if you stick in it and it's your be all and end all, that's how you get down the rabbit hole really quick.
Yeah.
And you need to, that's where someone or something needs to step in and go, here is something else. It's a great career. It's a great job, but it can end quite quickly. And you need to have a fallback or a plan B. You don't have to focus on your plan B, because if that takes away from your rugby, don't do that, because you've got a finite time to do it. So enjoy it and smash it while you can. At the same time, have that. There has to be an element of you that realizes that it is not that you can't retire on it. You can't be just a rugby player. You have to be something else in the end. So there's that element of it. And I think you only realize that when you walk away and when you get to the other side of it, where, and you'll also, you talk to kind of young players about it. You'll only probably listen to someone who's been through it and come out the other side. If you have a player welfare manager who's never done it, it's an amazing thing that they do. And it's great to sit there. But I know personally, as a 19-year-old, I was a bit of a knob. I was probably sat there going, yeah, I'm invincible, mate. Don't worry about it. I'm going to play till I'm 50. It's like, 25-year-old me turns around and goes, oh, mate, how wrong you were.
Yes.
Yeah. But no, it's that side. That's the side of it.
Yeah. Did you, whilst you were playing, did you have a plan B?
No. Not yet. I'd done a lot of work experience in different elements, and I think that was the side of it where I still thought I was going to play till I was 32. But I was trying to do enough work experience in between to narrow down what it is I wanted to do. So I was going into different areas, different sectors, and kind of realizing, all right, marketing, that's not for me. I've done a couple of days here. That's not what I want to go into. Okay, let's go into financial sector, go into broking side of oil broking. And I went, that's okay. Maybe that's interesting. I like that. Okay, we'll pick a few bits out of the kind of broking elements. You just narrow that. I was trying to do that. At the same time, I was getting more and more into it towards kind of 25, 6, 7. And then come 27, you're out into the real world and it's just like, okay. Yeah. So I think that's a huge side of it. If you can try and, you don't need to know exactly what you want to do, because half the people in the real world now don't know exactly what they want to do. But if you can, there are so many jobs out there and so many different sectors and so many different things. If you can try and narrow down your view from a 360, oh God, what's going on out here, to, all right, here's 120 degrees of interest in this sector. I know I like this. I know I like this. Let's see how I can put it all together and see where it takes me. That's what I think, if you can do, and that's kind of my advice to players, young guys coming through, if you can get that element and then maybe get a few bit exams under your belt, a few bits of learning, just something that kind of differentiates yourself from other candidates elsewhere. Just not being, I'm the rugby guy. I'm the rugby guy that likes property and I've done this, this, and this. So your bigger companies get amazing, great income.
Yeah. Yeah, you're spot on that work experience, and to utilize that time, and you know, let's face it, some of the contacts that you can build up through rugby, the sponsors and so on that would love to mm-hmm. get involved is so crucial, because as we always say, even in the real world, it allows you to say, I don't want that. Mm. Which you'd never know unless you tried it, and you know, that's spot on. So so how did you come to have the role that you've got with Gallagher?
So I ended up there. So I was actually working at a ship broking firm before. Okay. So I ended up quite a niche role. I was working at a company, and while I was there, I did miss the sports side of what I was doing, and I ended up, so Nathan Hines approached me and said, look, would you want to come on in kind of a business development capacity with him, under him, but then also mainly working, because of where how I'd retired with a career-ending injury and career-ending insurance. He pretty much just said I was a walking advert for having it.
Yes.
So obviously, as an insurance company that sponsored the Premiership, it was one of those where it all married in very nicely to be like, well, let's do this. And I kind of sat there and was like, well, it's something I'd like. I'd get to work closer back to working with kind of players and stuff like that. Not just in rugby, in different other sports. And kind of, it's a great role to kind of also, rather than being quite a niche sector, which I was working in.
Yeah.
I mean, dirty crude oil in something. It was very, very niche. To be able to work in a large company and be able to see a lot of different kind of sectors. I mean, a day for me can be working with a football agent, a rugby agent, aerospace in the afternoon, and then go off to a lunch or a dinner with the property guys. And you kind of get to an overview of all of it, and hopefully within a couple of years I'll be able to find kind of what sector it is that really kind of gets me going. So it's one of those where what I wanted to do kind of in rugby, I'm now finding more of an ability to do that in the job I'm in now, which is great. And I get to kind of really, really see a lot of the company, and it's, to be fair, they've been a great company and looking after me. Kind of Nathan's been good at kind of just taking me under his wing and showing me the ropes, and nearly three months in now, so still very new, but it's yeah, it's getting there, and I'm just, yeah, I'm enjoying it, and it's good fun, and to be able to work kind of closer back to sport again, it's something I did miss, definitely, for sure.
And I love that bit that, you know, Nathan saying to you, you know, you're virtually a walking advert for it. Because I know we can talk about insurance and so on, but it worked, didn't it?
No, but it worked
for you, didn't it? In terms of that, and you are doing now what you want to do, and it's
that's the thing.
Yes,
it's nice to look after the lads as well, to kind of make sure that they are covered. I mean, I was laughing then when you said it. I mean, no one is what something I realized having worked in insurance. No one really wants to speak about insurance, so it's quite good to be able to have rugby to fall back on, which makes life a lot easier. But with the sports side of it, yes, to be able to kind of look after lads, and hopefully if the worst comes to the worst with any of them, to be able to look at them and go, look. Yeah, don't worry, we've got you covered, we'll support you. And that's also where kind of I sit in the team, is being able to support the lads that have done it, having been through it, being someone outside kind of their team and their rugby circle, just to be like, look, if you need to pick up the phone to me, mate, here's my number, I'm always around, we can go grab a beer, we can go whatever, have a chat, it's fine, it's one of those. So to be able to sit there and do that, and I mean, that bit sounds slightly philanthropic, and it is for me. It's to be able to do something that's actually feels like you're giving something back a little bit. It feels nice.
Yeah, Jack. You know, it's great that you're now doing that bit back to the sport, and you know, using all of that experience that you have got to good ends as well. As you say, it may sound. It may sound a bit philanthropic, but it's true, isn't it? What you're doing, and hopefully pass that on. Jack, it's been fab chatting to you for the last hour about everything, really. What I really love is the choice of, you know, the choice of games, because it's about your mates, and it isn't about, oh, I'm Jack Clifford and I scored 3 tries there and I made 72 hits in that game and so on. But it's just that experience. And it's fab to look back on all of those games to pick those sorts of things, up. So it's been a fascinating chat. And I wish you every success with Gallagher, and I'm sure you'll be a huge, huge success as you were on the rugby field. Jack, it's been a pleasure.
It's been
good stuff.
Thank you very much. Cheers, mate.
No. Okay. Take care.
See you, mate. Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Rugby Buzz. We hope you're enjoying these podcasts. And if you are, then why not tell some of your rugby mates to listen too and spread the word? We would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a review and subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And don't forget, all the episodes from Series 1 and 2 are still available to catch wherever you normally listen to your podcasts. We're now back to full steam with our live events too. We have a brilliant pre-match event before Gloucester play Worcester on the 25th of March, which is now on sale. And also, with some other special guests, a theatre evening with the great Sir Gareth Edwards in Monmouth, and a very special Lions 1997 25th anniversary dinner in Gloucester, with some of the victorious squad, including the head coach, Sir Ian McGeachan. That promises to be a very special night. Details of all of our events can be found on our website, which is www.hnhb.buzz. We'll be back with you next time for another episode, but in the meantime, be safe.